We're at the Cincinnati Old Time Radio Convention, where we have the great opportunity to talk to one of the most important people in a radio studio throughout the Golden Age, the sound effects man, and we're glad to welcome Barney Beck to our program.
Very nice speaking to you.
Barney, you've been doing lots of reenactments here at the convention this weekend, and you've been working in sound effects for, well, how long?
Well, I started in 1943, and I finished working on the programs about 89.
Wow. So.
And now I still do it at conventions and, and demonstrations.
Well,
and
how does one become a sound effects man?
Well, to be very honest with you, I did sound effects and painted scenery and sets for off-Broadway shows. And my father and uncle were in vaudeville years back, and what they would ask me to do, can we do this, can we do that? And since it was a father and uncle, I didn't have a choice. I had to do it, and I did it. But I learned a tremendous amount from them. And I think you know that I got a call from a friend of mine who was doing drafting work, showing statistical setups at CBS. And he said, Barney, I just had lunch with a sound effects man, and he told me in order to do sound effects, you don't have to know anything. And I thought of you immediately. So I decided with that type of information, I should apply for the job at CBS because I wasn't working at the time. And I went to CBS. And since I didn't have the technical knowledge that they wanted, they said, well, we'll get in touch with you. And I had nothing to lose, so I said, well, if that's the case, I'll have to go over to NBC. And he was astounded by my effrontery. And he said, well, maybe you ought to stay here and we can talk this over. And I was put on the job of October 1943.
So what? But you had not ever done sound effects?
No.
Per se?
Per se. I never done radio sound effects, that's definitely.
So then what was the first step there?
Well, they make you an apprentice. They said, you'll work with this man and that man. And I said, that was great, and I learned. And I learned from some of the best. As a matter of fact, one of the better sound effects men that I worked with was a man called Byron Winget that came from Cincinnati, Ohio. So, and he taught me a lot. And we had 78 RPM records that had between 88 and 94 grooves to the inch. And he showed me how to spot them and cue them. And he really showed me a lot on the business. And then there was another man, McCluskey. In other words, as far as I was concerned, CBS was the best place to learn because after I went to WOR, from what I had learned from these guys after 2.5 years there, I looked like I was pretty good.
So 2.5 years at CBS and then WOR.
That's right.
Well, what was your first solo flight as a sound effects man?
As a matter of fact, I probably had to do Murder at Midnight. Which was a half-hour mystery show, and that was a freelance job, as a matter of fact. And he also felt I needed all the help in the world, and he helped me.
CBS permitted freelancing?
Oh yeah! Oh my gosh! Yes, it permitted freelancing. Unfortunately, one or two of the men would call in sick to do a freelance job, and that would be no good. they would be fired or reprimanded. And I was called into the service, and what occurred then was they told me when I went that that would be goodbye and good luck, because when the war ended, they'd have to take their men back. But what happened, and as I said to you before, what is a break, sometimes you can't believe, a poor guy from Chicago was a sound man. And he'd been separated from his wife, and he decided he couldn't stay in New York anymore. And then on the day I came back, he had gone out on a binge, and I got his job.
Oh, so you lost and you got a job all in the same time.
Right? That's right. Mm-hmm.
And then you were at Mutual for WR Mutual for
That's
how
right.
long?
That's right, from 46 right through till 89.
Wow, wow. Well, you worked on some of the biggest radio programs of all time. You were the sound man on The Adventures of Superman.
Absolutely.
So you kept that that flight going, the wind behind Superman.
As a matter of fact, we used that record, the same record that was used in the Sergeant Preston of, mm-hmm. of the Blizzard.
The reenactment.
Yeah. And
you mean that was the Yukon, the wind blowing out of the cabin in the Yukon?
Because
it's the same wind that propelled Superman, right?
That's correct. And the thing that was funny, they had to have Superman land, mm-hmm. and what they did was they took the Ricochet record that you may have heard on the commercial, mm-hmm. and they played it backwards.
The so shotgun from the
should have been like that.
Yeah.
So instead, it went zoomp like that. It sounded like Superman landing. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Well, I could always see Superman swooping down and then boom, coming to a halt
exactly.
on his feet.
Right.
On his feet all the time.
That's true. That was one of the bits that we did.
And now I know you worked on for a little while at least on Nick Carter, Master Detective.
Yes,
so that was banging on the door. Another case for Nick Carter.
Right. They had several openings, but that mm-hmm, was the one mm-hmm. that I did with Lon and
Lon Clark, who was the
Lon
actor.
Clark, uh-huh. right? Mm-hmm. And of course, there are certain actors that are wonderful to work with, and they really help you. Mm-hmm. There was a man called Santos Ortega who was the fat man. He was Ellery Queen's father, mm-hmm. and I think he played Charlie Chan too. But the whole thing that was interesting, and he also was Perry Mason. So he worked all the time. He was a fantastic actor, and he saw me coming in there, and Perry Mason was going into a haunted house, and I was green. I was really green behind the ears there, and he said to me, "What are you worried about?" And I said, "I don't know whether I'll be able to get all those cues." And he looked at me and he said, "Don't worry about a thing. Just watch me." And he visually did the effects for me. He opened the door and he did the knocking. And
he showed you what
he was doing. And I didn't have to follow the script. It was great to see that someone would help a total stranger and would really mm-hmm. walk me through that thing. And I had the pleasure of... when I started, of Frank Lovejoy, who became mm-hmm. a big star for a while, he did the same thing. There were a lot of very nice actors
yes.
and people who were very helpful. Another man was Brett Morrison, who played The Shadow.
The Shadow.
And he also would work with you. And unlike certain actors, he would definitely accept the error that was made in the show. He'd say, "I blew it," and he would point to the uh-huh. to himself when we were on a recording or on a session, and then the director said, "Let it go, we can handle it," you know. But it's there are people who are very, very helpful, and you get to work with them.
Sure. Now, you mentioned The Shadow. That was very often done before a live audience.
Exactly.
It? And so you were really on the spot to, and this was live broadcasting.
Live broadcasting, right? And what I didn't mention to you now is the fact that when we were doing these shows, when you had to do a gunshot, mm-hmm. you had to have two pistols in your hand because one might jam, and you had to have three shots. You had mm-hmm. to make sure there were three shots. And what would occur is... you had to make sure that everything synchronized. Like if there was one of the Ellery Queen shows I did was a guy, Ellery is asking him if he killed this person, and the man says, in his shooting gallery in the basement, he says, "No, I didn't kill him, but if so-and-so hadn't, I would have," and it was supposed to go bang, ding, bang, ding, bang, ding. Well, that was great. The sound man who was senior to me said to me, "Don't you dare look at me." And the reason he said that, if you see a guy start to pull the trigger, you might instinctively hit the bell. And what he wanted was only the bell to ring when he shot the gun, which I understood. But what happened was on the West Coast show, and I don't know if you realize, in the old days, there was no such thing as recording it and then playing it back. So on the live show, on the repeat, I had to turn my back, and the guy said, "No, Ellery, I didn't kill him, but if so-and-so hadn't, I would have." And it went bang, ding, bang, ding, bang, ding, bang, ding, like that. And I was furious, and I, when we got off, I said, "What are you doing to me? You're trying to make me look like an idiot. I don't need help from you, you know." So he said, "No, you don't understand. The director was so impressed at that fast timing that he cued for the fourth shot." And he felt, if the director says fourth shot, he had to be a fourth shot. Meanwhile, I had put the bell down because it was only supposed to be three bells.
So it took you a millisecond to get over there.
That's right. You know. So those are the things that were always very
I always felt that the sound man was really another actor in the studio doing
well,
the
you
show,
had to
right?
Be. You had to be, because it's just... if you're working with the actor, they have to feel what you're doing. And even when you're doing a fight scene, when if I go bang like that and there's no reaction from the guy being hit or the guy hitting, it just sounds like nothing. And I would always say to the actor, "You've got to make me look good. I need the job." But they would work with me because they understood why I was crying.
Well, a punch in a fight scene, you punch your hand, your open hand with your fist,
right? Like that. And then the actor has to go, "Why, you no good so-and-so, take that." You have to hear the effort and the that. And then the one who's hit has to go,
See, that's almost impossible to do if you've got that punch on tape someplace.
Oh,
correct?
I'm sure.
Yeah,
right. It all has to be timed out and felt.
But well, when you were performing all of these various sound effects, did you ever come up with against a challenge that you couldn't meet for a sound effect?
Every
that
day. Well, you know, so I've been asked many times, what's your hardest effect to do? And I always laugh because simple thing like a door open. You look kind of stupid when the doorknob comes off in your hand. and it's happened. And sometimes we used to kid at CBS. There was professional jealousy and so on. So what would occur is they might... And Bob Mott, who's written a book on radio sound effects, he would say that some of the guys would come in and turn off the AC for the turntables. And it's kind of distressing when you're doing a show like I did a show called The Sea Hound. And I'm sure you've heard that one. It was one of the kiddie shows. But what would occur is the Sea Hound had an opening of like a destroyer thing. Whoop, 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 like that. And what occurred was the turntable decided not to go. And that's the opening thing of the show. And I go to throw the switch, and nothing's happening. So I was only kidding. Anyhow, what occurred was I had to do it by hand, and any tone like that is going to sound silly. But there's no such thing as a hard show, hard sound, if someone is willing to work with you, because you can compromise and get the things set.
Well, if there is an error like that, either beyond your control or something that you did wrong, I'm sure that over the years you've learned how to cover that.
And some people will not accept what you're trying to do, and you're stuck.
Sometimes you need the actor then to help.
Exactly. And as I said, there were some actors that were just fabulous.
Now, when you break down a door, when someone is breaking down a door, say, "I've got to get into this room, nobody's answering, I've got to get in there and save her because she's turning the gas on."
Right.
Now, what device would you do for? What would you use for that?
Well, you would use a peach basket, and it would the wooden peach, I guess you'd call them wooden, and you'd hit against the body of the door, and as you'd hit it, you'd crack the peach basket a little. Then you hit it again for the second, and the actor would work with you.
Mm-hmm.
He'd say, "We got to break this in." One, and you'd hear the thing. Two, and on the third one, you'd turn the door over practically. Actually, we did have the other sound man holding the door, so you would go flying across the studio.
And you're talking about the little fruit baskets that when you get strawberries
and
blueberries
peaches,
and peaches in the store.
Exactly.
Well, now, in a recent trip to the supermarket, I don't see these wooden baskets anywhere.
Right.
They're a little plastic, see?
And that
what happened?
Well, that's why we close up radio. No, seriously, though, what occurred was we were down to two shows on Mutual, and they kept thinking the...
Go ahead.
All right, what we would do is we would do two shows we were doing, and we were doing a show called The FBI in Peace and War and Gangbusters.
Yeah.
All right. Anyhow, what occurred was with Gangbusters, we always had to break down a door or a closet and so on. What occurred was that we didn't have any more peach baskets left. And I would say, we need to buy peach baskets. And they would say, well, the show's going off soon. And I'd say, well, as long as it's not going off, I have to go to 10th Avenue, where New York
produce
yeah. was. And what we would do is they'd say, well, don't buy a few for the next show. So I ended up, and I said, I can't do it if I'm doing commercials or anything. And what finally occurred was they ordered 500 for me.
Oh.
And I waited, and I waited. And on the day I did the last show, the 500 baskets were in the purchasing office. So I ended up taking 500 baskets home with me.
Now, are you still working on that supply?
That's exactly right. Yeah, I know it sounds silly, but it's true.
Well, that's wonderful. So, okay. Well, what are some of the most difficult effects to create? I know many things are on record, you know.
Right,
you had to cue it up precisely. But the effects that you need to create yourself, what's some of the most difficult?
Well, you tried to create, we had to create rocket ships when we started going into space, and you try to do whatever they're asking for. And always remember, somebody's concept of what speed is may be a high oscillation tone, or it could be a swish sound, and you... try to explain, this is what we got, and you have to help it with voice or music, and you blend into a thing that may picture the thing.
Is the power of suggestion from the written word and as it's being delivered very important to the element of sound?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. The response of the actor is always important to the sound. Like I said to you before, I could do picking up a box, and if the actor says, here, let me help you with this, all you need is a slight pat to get the thing working. But if you're doing a thing with an actor not helping you, it becomes difficult to try and transfer the situation.
If the actor's walking into a darkened room and he wants to turn on the light switch and there's no dialogue, that click that you would make is almost lost or meaningless. But he says, I'm going to walk into this room, there's no light on in here, I'll turn on the switch, right?
Exactly. and they do things that are very effective. And a director even said to me, the most exciting sound you could ever come up with in any show is silence. For example, there was one of the Shadow shows. Anytime somebody got killed in this particular program, they always heard a Chinese gong. So there's a scream, and we run up the stairs, and Brett Morrison, the Shadow, bangs on the door and says, hello, hello, are you in there? And there was silence. Then you heard the Chinese gong, and you knew that person had died. You know? So you can pre-establish those things. That's very good.
Now, when someone takes a gun and shoots another person in a scene.
Right.
And you hear the gunshot, and you may hear the actor say, oh,
right, exactly.
And then you hear the body falling. Now, I think in real life, you might not hear that body fall.
That's
he would
true.
A man
go
a,
out completely,
would
right?
Fall down, maybe. Gosh, he might be on carpeting or whatever. You wouldn't hear it, but we always heard the body fall on the radio.
Right.
How was that sound achieved?
Well, we had a prop table, mm-hmm. and what we would have to do, and this was comical in respect, you couldn't have silverware on the thing, you couldn't have any bells, because you, if you heard the body fall, and we did it with elbow, elbow, hand, hand.
On the table.
On the table, mm-hmm. on the prop table, right. Mm-hmm. And the guy's voice, it was great, but if, as he did that, and you'd hear the glass clatter or the bell ring, you'd yeah. say, oh my gosh, you know.
Well, that's another thing, right? You talk about the glass clattering. Now, when someone says, pour me a cup of coffee, or would you like a cup of coffee, or
right.
have a drink or
right.
something?
You always had it. If you had yeah. a drink, mm-hmm. you'd have the bottle, and you'd tip the glass before mm-hmm. you poured. You always had it.
You heard the clinking
yeah,
of,
right.
of the glass.
Or
right.
if it's 10 cups, you, mm-hmm. you always try to preset the picture so they can hear it. And we did that with the actor and the director all knowing it. The... have to do your footsteps like a person would normally mm-hmm. walk into a door, into a room. You walk, take your steps, and then you have to stop because then you open the door, take two or three steps in, close the door, and then you continue your walk. You just don't walk through a, which I've yeah. done in demos, where you just keep walking, and it's kind of funny, but it's not realistic.
What happened when the door doesn't open? Sometimes
you cry
for
a
you.
Lot. It did happen to me when I was doing one show when mm-hmm. the doorknob had got off the hinge, I guess you'd call it, and just came out of my hand. And I said, oh, or even better than that, I was doing one of the soap operas at CBS, and this is how you learn mm-hmm. from experience. They were discussing that so-and-so had been seen with another woman, and she... And soap operas were, oh my gosh, and drop her cup and break. That was, they were having their tea. And what occurred in this particular case, I dropped it, and it was a very good cup, apparently, and it bounced right across the studio without breaking. And the line I always say, if it can happen, it's happened to me, that type of thing.
Well, how did they recover from that then?
Well, they just went on.
Just went on.
But I died, I think. That's one of my many deaths.
Well, very often the listener does not catch it.
Oh, there's no doubt
about
that.
Because if you keep moving and don't stop.
Exactly.
Right, yeah.
But what I did after that, if I ever had to do a break of a sort, I carried two pieces of the pottery mm-hmm. there. So even if the big part didn't break, you'd hear the clatter.
You have the backup.
Right. So things like that you do to... As for security,
and a window breaking or a mirror breaking or something. Now, what did you use for that?
We had a pane of glass, and they had a glass crash, and we would try. We also had, believe it or not, a car door that was on wheels that we bring into studios and mm-hmm. open it. And truthfully, an icebox door had even better sound for a car door. It sounded like more expensive because mm-hmm. it was compact and heavy.
Uh-huh.
But if a director, certain directors, didn't see it visually, they wouldn't like it. So we had a problem there. We also did the same thing with the jail door. Now, jail door had to have the bars mm-hmm. and the metal around and the metal base so you could hear a roller go over it.
Uh-huh.
And it sounded great, and it looked great. When I had to do a remote, I couldn't possibly bring a big jail door over, but what I would do is get the old roller skate and roll it across the metal base, and it would sound just as good.
It would rattle a little bit like that.
Yeah, rattle, mm-hmm. and you'd put it on a metal plate, and you'd hear, and then you'd hit the end, it'd sound like the jail door was closing, but you had to sell it, that's all.
Must have been a lot of fun to do all of that stuff.
I enjoyed every minute of it.
Did you work on many Westerns?
That was... most famous one, I would say, was the B-Bar-B, Bobby Benson.
Bobby Benson,
yes.
And the B-Bar-B Riders. Huh?
You got it, they are. And we enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. We had two Bobby Bensons, mm-hmm. and it was very funny. The nephew of the producer had just come from England, and they let him do the Bobby Benson for a while. And he was good, but I didn't think the English accent was quite right.
It didn't sound like he was on the ranch.
Right, right.
Well, how many sound men would work on a show like that? A lot of action on something
like
that.
Usually it was two. For those shows. But Nick Carter was a one-man mm-hmm. show, and Comic Weekly that I did with Lon Clark was one man because they were on a tight budget.
He'd be reading the funnies and you would provide some of
the
sound
effects? Well, he would write the script for the funnies, and he had a woman who played like a four-year-old, five-year-old girl asking, what does this mean? Why is Prince Valiant so upset? Or why is Dagwood mad at Blondie? Mm-hmm. And we did all those shows. And the girl served as the purpose for the girl at home mm-hmm. to say, what does that mean, Daddy? Yeah. The Comic Weekly
taking the place of the child at home.
Right, right, exactly.
On the Western shows, you used, I guess, coconuts and the plumber's friend, the
yeah,
payoff
right, the
end.
Plumber's helper, yeah, plumber's helper. Right, right. And
they had to go in a different base, right?
They were, well, if you had dirt mm-hmm. and so on, you would get the effect. It was very good.
You had a box of gravel, perhaps?
Right. Or dirt, yeah.
Dirt, yeah.
And the coconut shells were sharper, mm-hmm. but the rubber plunger would not interfere with dialogue, so you had to determine what you
use
were looking for. Yeah.
And the horse, that you have to create that yourself?
Yeah, well, we would...
The whinny or the...
Oh, that would be on record, but we mm-hmm. Sometimes go... like that.
Get them up, scouts. Huh?
Yeah, right, right, right. And it was a lot of fun. I was very lucky.
You had a wonderful career with all of that, and now you're sharing your talents with folks who...
Well, these people are very nice here.
You've been on the nostalgia convention circuit for a while,
about
haven't
six
you?
Years.
Done a few things like that, yeah. Been in the audience today for one of the programs. The audience just loves what you do, and to see how you're doing it. It's a sound effects always very fascinating to people.
Well, even when I was a teenager, I'd go to the radio programs, and I was always fascinated by it. And yet there was some, like I did Dr. Christian mm-hmm. with Gene Herschelt when he came to New York, and the agency there felt that sound was... distracting to the people, so they would always put us in backstage, and
distracting to the studio audience.
To studio,
oh, I see, yeah.
It really didn't do that really, but they felt it was a detraction from the stars like Gene Herschel and so on.
That actually, it detracted by you moving out of sight. It detracted from your rapport with the actors.
Exactly,
correct?
Exactly. Yeah. But every director is their own genius.
Well, I guess I know the answer to this already, but if you had to do it all over again, would you?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. As I said, I've had so much fun mm-hmm. doing it, and after radio drama departed, I started doing commercials and started mm-hmm. doing fashion shows, and then...
Sound effects for fashion shows?
Oh, I yeah. They do little vignettes and little... why would you buy that? Because... And so on, you know. Mm-hmm. But the thing that was so funny was I started doing burlets because my company and I had a difference of opinion, and I was going to be punished because I was doing these things. And what occurred was I made out so well with burlets that even after I lost my job, you know, when I retired, I mm-hmm. should say, I started doing burlets freelance. Mm-hmm. It was fun.
Well, you provide a lot of fun, and there were thousands of radio actors, and most of them very, very talented.
Oh, absolutely!
But they're in proportion. I bet there wasn't even 100 good sound effects people, were there?
I would say that was just about the right number.
About right.
They were probably about 35 at CB at the. New York City, and maybe same amount at Hollywood.
Yeah. And then a few here and there, but
exactly.
That would be it. My gosh. That was that's a singular occupation, then, isn't it? And
well,
how important it was to the great days of radio.
It was a load of fun,
yeah.
And you had to try to figure out what the directors wanted and work with them.
Yeah.
I'm not out to prove that I'm great or anything. Mm-hmm. As I've said to several directors, we'll try it. If you don't want to try it my way, let's do it your way. Mm-hmm. Some of them were very cooperative.
Did you ever have any? One last question for you, Barney. Did you ever have any? Did you feel any envy for the guy who did Fibber McGee's closet, for example?
Oh.
Or Jack Benny's vault?
Those things I thought were great, uh-huh. But I also point out to you that the people who I worked with, like Bob and Ray, mm-hmm. and Gene Klavan, there was a man called Bob Poole, who's the number one disc jockey in the United States, and he wasn't even heard in New York City. Mm-hmm. And then finally Mutual brought him up there, and he was a fantastic guy to work with. And he said he was all excited about coming up to New York, and his sound man, and I had been placed on a very strict diet, and I was always hungry at the time, so he saw this idiot taking carrots out of his lapel pocket to eat because I was always hungry at the time. And he said, this is a weird town, and he really had me laughing. It was just crazy. No, you have to be willing to adjust to the change.
You do what you do, and you do it well. Yeah, well, and you did too. And
I
thank you so much for providing us with a pleasant interlude now, and also for a great sound career you provided
us. Thank you.
Thanks for everybody out there in Radio Land. Thank you.